Welcome to the My Buddy Green podcast. I'm Jason Wachob, founder and co-CEO of My Buddy Green, and your host.
Hey guys, we are in for a treat this week. Our guest is Kevin Love, who is a five-time NBA All-Star and won a championship with the Cleveland Cavs in 2016. And even though I could probably talk about basketball with him for hours, today we're going to talk about an issue near and dear to my heart, mental health. It's something that Kevin is extraordinarily passionate about. Is he's created the amazing Kevin Love Fund, which aims to prioritize mental health alongside physical health. Amen to that. I've lost loved ones to mental health, and it's an issue that so many of us have struggled with, especially right now in our new world of COVID-19. So I am thrilled to be talking with Kevin today. Welcome, Kevin.
I appreciate it. I always love hearing the intros. It makes me feel good before I dive into some of the darkness and anxieties I've felt through my life. So I appreciate that. It allows me to settle in on these type of interviews here.
Well, let's start. You know, you kind of came out with your personal struggle with mental health in a post I read, like millions of people, I'm sure, on the Players Tribune, entitled, I love the title, Everyone is Going Through Something, because that's true. that is so true. And you start off by saying you had a panic attack in a game, yeah, right after halftime. So can you just like share with the audience, you know, what happened and walk us through your journey here?
Yeah, for the sake of not being too long-winded, basically, you know, there was so many things, basically all the pillars in my life, whether it be family, relationship, everything from business or just all these pillars in life and, you know, hobbies related to what I'm working on. Like even, I didn't have my fund at the time, but there were so many things that I was working on that weren't, you know, going in the right direction for me. And then the last pillar to fall, which was always my safe place, was basketball. We were a team that had made a big trade in the summer and who was expected to win, you know, go to the finals, if not win the championship. And we started off with an awful record and guys weren't playing well. Some of that blame was put on me. And so I was going to work and I was going, you know, being on the floor and, you know, it just seemed like everything was falling apart on top of already having anxiety and dealing with depression since my earliest memory. So for me, it was, right after halftime on November 5th, over 2 years ago. And I just got to a point where I wasn't feeling right. I'd come out of a timeout and, you know, I didn't really hear or wasn't really absorbing what was going on. And like, everything in my head and everything in my body just seemed like I was having a heart attack. I was having a moment where I was in sheer panic. My heart started beating incredibly fast. I felt like it was jumping out of my chest. And I just, so much of the time in my life, I had a place to escape to. And this was so public. I was on the floor and I just told Tyronn Lue, who was the coach at the time, I said, just take me out of the game. I ran back to the locker room. I'm looking around for, you know, something that I didn't even know what I was looking for. I was just trying to escape all of this. So I actually ended up running and I didn't want anybody to see because at the time I felt like it was shameful. I ran to our head athletic trainer, Steve Spiro's office, and I just fell on the ground and had this episode where I couldn't breathe. I felt like I couldn't get air into my lungs. I was reaching my hand down my throat and like really just trying to, internalize or think about what was going on, but I just couldn't process anything, mind or body. So I actually, you know, came to a point where I was, you know, passed out and I was ended up hooked to oxygen and, they sent me to the emergency room and everything checked out and I'm sitting there like, okay, so what just happened? And as I was mentioning before we came on, I literally just read this morning that 1/3 of adults suffering their first panic attack end up in the emergency room. And that even, you know, as I read and as I go through this process of trying to understand the why, not only in my story, but shared experiences and what everybody else is going through and seeing the numbers. Just reading that allowed me to feel more settled in, because I think the community behind this and feeling like you're not alone is incredibly important. I think that's what even led to more anxiety and allowed me to spiral even more before I shared my story, because I thought it was a sign of weakness. I thought my teammates were going to look at me as weak. I didn't know if, you know, basketball being my safe space was going to be able to continue. I didn't know how the front office or ownership was going to look at me. I didn't know how, you know, what kind of word was going to spread around, you know, my teammates or the league if, you know, guys see me, you know, run in the locker room and heard that I ended up in the emergency room at the Cleveland Clinic, were going to say. So I think it was me trying to really hide a lot of this, but that was my, you know, major panic attack in my life where I realized that, wow, I really need to look myself in the mirror and make some changes.
So you mentioned you were concerned about being perceived as being weak among, you know, your colleagues, teammates, et cetera. You know, do you think there's a stigma around mental health among pro athletes? And I'm curious, like, how do you react when someone's not necessarily on the same page or doesn't see being vulnerable as a strength and they see it as a weakness? How do you deal with that? And what's the perception, you know, and what's been the feedback since you came out?
Yeah, well, I actually think that being vulnerable, I read a great book called Lincoln's Melancholy as well, how his, you know, depression and his melancholy led him into great things and being this, you know, symbol for hope and symbol for change, you know, in the 19th century. So he was an incredibly important figure in history. So I thought that was very telling, even going back, you know, almost, you know, what, like 200 years ago, damn near. So I thought that was incredibly important. But as far as the stigma goes, I mean, that's something that we're working at. That's like the, speaking of pillars, like, you know, I mentioned my life, but at the Kevin Love Fund, we have stigma, education, tools, and research. So the first thing is realizing that it's normal to feel this way. If you, you know, and shared stories and I mentioned community and strength in numbers, while it's tough to absorb how many people are suffering and it's tough to, you know, realize that people are going through a lot of pain, it's also on the other side of that, really powerful knowing that you're not alone and you're not isolated, especially in a time like this. I did my post yesterday just on loneliness. Like, that human connection is what you want to feel. So in how my first, you know, and coming out and pressing send on this article, on the Players Tribune article, everybody's going through something, I was really nervous about, like, how this is going to be perceived. And my agent was like, are you sure you want to do this? And I said, listen, I think the biggest thing for me was I was done suffering in silence and done hiding, because I felt like I would go home and I was able to be myself or go into my room, shut the door, you know, stare at the ceiling and okay, everything's good, but everything wasn't good. And then I, you know, had this immediate stress response when I woke up and have to go, you know, to practice, shoot around the arena. And it was like I was putting on a mask and I didn't want to do that anymore. I wanted to try to be comfortable in my own skin and, you know, continue to, or start this journey that I'm on now. In pressing send, he said, you know, everybody's going to know about this. And I said, maybe. And, you know, this, you're going to be, you know, exposed in a way that you might, you know, you're going to be open to, you know, a lot of conversation about this and people are going to talk. And I said, yeah, maybe. But he goes, I get what you're doing. If you can help that one kid and pay it forward, like, you're really going to help a lot of people. And after that, even that first day, it was crazy to see not only how many people came up to me, but the text messages I was getting, the emails I was getting. So we actually, at the Players Tribune, opened up a separate email, and we were just trying to get back to people. And it ended up being, in the first week, like 10,000 emails. I remember in the first day, I think it was over 3,500. So it just showed you, like, people coming out in droves and numbers, and whether they experience it or not, you know, it's only an arm distance away. Like the saying is, you know, mental illness is either in your family or not yet. And I think that's what allowed and will allow in the future for us to kind of be able to reach out and touch it. Obviously, we put a name to it and, you know, we'll continue to beat down the stigma. And you're seeing that this thing doesn't discriminate. And even at our level, like athletes, we're looking at as superheroes and we've, oh, they have their superpowers and they can't be hurt. But, you know, success is not immune to depression. I say that all the time. Like that's when I remember hearing that was actually from the actor Bryan Cranston, a great actor, love, you know, Breaking Bad, all that. But he had spoken about Kate Spade, who, you know, had this amazing business and actually said at the time she, in an amazing career, she had said, you know, it's going to hurt my brand. It's going to hurt my business if I'm able to expose or if I do expose this. And then with a guy that I loved and lived vicariously through and felt like I traveled the world with was Anthony Bourdain. And I remember it was game four of the finals that year. And he had taken his own life in Paris. And Bryan Cranston said, you know, success is not immune to depression. You see, you know, people that seemingly have everything. So I think you're seeing that more, that at every level, every walk of life, every demographic, socioeconomic status, so on and so forth, people struggle or people's families struggle. So I think that's something that, you know, I've seen around stigma and around the perception and reception of, you know, myself telling the story.
100% agreed. Depression, anxiety, mental health does not discriminate. And, you know, something I've been thinking about, you know, pro athletes are known for routines, and routines are great for mental health. Like, you know, athletes are famous for eating the same dish at the same time. And, you know, you're working out hard and you're moving, and all those things are great for mental health. And so in this COVID-19 world, when there is no routine, and people always often say, like, when you're alone with your thoughts and you're struggling, that could not be a good place. You know, you're literally stuck. I was telling you earlier, I texted my old coach, Armand Hill. I was like, how are you doing? This is probably the longest break from basketball you've ever had in your life. And he laughed. He was like, yeah, it is. He's like, I'm struggling. So like, what have you been doing? And I'm curious if people have been reaching out, like, in this time where routines are just thrown out the window.
Yeah. So a couple of things, especially, you know, these moments when I can slip into a depression, and depending on how long it is, like, my mind plays, plays tricks on you. Like, I'm predisposed to it. I, you know, start to think all these crazy thoughts, and especially in terms of sleep, like, I'll want to go to bed at night, or and sometimes if I'm really, really tired and getting good sleep from the night before, I go to just lay down and take a 20-30 minute nap. It's like, all right, you tell your brain, I want to sleep. And what does it do? It's like, no, let's think about the last 10 years, everything bad that's happened to you. So like, that's a funny way of putting it, but in some cases, depending on the day or the night, like, if you don't check in, that's what I mean. Your mind can play tricks on you. It's like, okay, I need to get a good night's sleep because there's adverse effects to not having that. But yeah, basketball being taken away has been extremely tough. I think people, especially me, I'm such a creature of habit or creature of routine in everyday life. So I've had to really make, and I love checklists. I love writing stuff down. I've, you know, pages and notes everywhere. It just allows me to like spill it all. So, that has been something where I've tried to, you know, have a routine where I'm trying to go to bed at the same time. I'm trying to wake up, make sure I'm taking a shower, putting my workout clothes out, having breakfast, making sure I'm eating clean, getting in the gym, sweat, take some of that stress, that anxiety of the unknown away. And then also thinking about it in terms of, I mentioned core competencies, or pillars, like, I'm working on my job as well. Like, in the morning, I'm able to like be with my girl, be with my dog, work on that. But then also, like, all right, we're going to go and get a lift in. We're going to go and get a sweat in and do my work early. Then after that, I try and, you know, fill my days with, you know, just other things, whether it be, you know, the most simple, like eating healthy, making sure I'm getting outside. I'm setting my feet in the grass. Luckily, you know, having a dog forces you to get outside. You know, I'm a big film guy. Typically at night, we, you know, lay down on the couch or you'll watch downstairs, watch a great movie. I'm always, you know, as I mentioned, reading as well. There's a lot that I try and add into my routine to fill some of the time, but also knowing that people feel like they have to do a lot, but sometimes it's okay to just do nothing, especially during a time like this. But there was another thing. The second thing I wanted to say was, it's funny. I actually said this to, I believe it was Richard Jefferson. I said, we're never in a place as basketball players and we have our summers, we're never in a place more than 2 weeks at a time. And that changes routine as well. To be, even the summers, whether we're taking a vacation, whether we're going somewhere to train, whether we're going to see a friend, so on and so forth, like we're leaving every couple of weeks. We're very seldom in a place longer than 14 days or so. So it's definitely a major change and something that, you know, we'll look back at and remember this time, but it's very important for, you know, mental and physical health, really, to make sure that you are filling the days with a good routine. And I think having a routine and making one and trying to stick to it is very healthy.
A lot to unpack there. I have a couple follow-ups. So you mentioned eating clean and sleep. You know, has nutrition, has taking care of sleep really helped with regards to taking care of yourself mentally?
Huge. And I for the longest time, and I still am, you know, I struggle with sleep. I've always been a high energy guy, even, you know, an 82 game plus type of season. I mean, listen, the season takes a toll on you. It's long, it's a grind. I mean, anybody that's ever been in a basketball season can feel that. But even when you make that transition to, you know, college to the pros, I mean, it's like you're getting 4 games a week. And, you know, early in my career, we were going 4 games in 5 nights. And, you know, it's a grind. So finding ways to reduce inflammation, because I was saying too, like kill the body, the mind will die. Making sure that you're keeping that inflammation down is huge. But sleep is like imperative for, you know, cognitive function. In the REM sleep, deep sleep is incredibly restorative for your body. It can affect your entire day depending on how you sleep. So that's, I think eating clean is a big part of that. Getting, releasing stress through working out and just, I mean, taking in what's around you, like, trying to be mindful of what the day is going to bring. And I think it all starts in the morning when you wake up, like trying not to, I'm guilty of it too. Like sitting there and being on my phone, like not being present, just being on my phone and, you know, checking texts, checking emails. And sometimes that can have a negative effect on your day. Like it's just go, 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 go until the nighttime, and then you go through your routine, boom, and then you try to lay down to go to sleep. Like that can be counterproductive. While you think you're being extremely productive, you're actually being counterproductive by very likely affecting your sleep, but at the same time, not allowing yourself to take a break or micro breaks throughout the day and just say, okay, listen, like I need to, you know, allow myself to have a life and not worry so much all the time about making this living for myself.
I hear you on sleep. I can help you there. We have an amazing sleep supplement. It solves the three problems. One, getting to sleep, stopping the thoughts. Two, making sure you stay asleep. And then three, making sure you don't wake up like you got hit like a truck, which right. I'll send you after the call. But like, I've always wondered, specifically to basketball players too, you guys play at night and then you got a press conference. So your adrenaline's flowing. Then you get in a plane. By the time you get to bed, it could be 4 or 5 a.m. and you got to do it again. So like your circadian rhythm is just like it totally rips. All over the place.
Yeah. No, it's tough. And then we're crossing over time zones.
Yes.
Yeah. And, you know, that what they say, like it's an hour. For every hour you change, it's like, one day is 1 hour. So like we don't have a chance to even like absorb that and allow ourselves to change our circadian rhythm. So we have to find other ways to combat that. We have to, I have a melatonin supplement that I use, but that doesn't always work. And that's when I can have, you know, sometimes you have crazy dreams and you wake up, you didn't get a good sleep. But I mean, in any walk of life, that's another one. Like it doesn't matter who you are. You need a good night's rest, you need sleep, and you need to find, and toy with it. Like I've tried every modality, everything in the world to try to get a good night's sleep. And I'm still trying to figure it out. And it's typically I get great REM sleep, but my deep sleep, I don't know if it's because I crush my body and you know, tear apart my body during the day and I'm trying to recover. And, you know, at night, my, you know, maybe my heart rate or my heart rate variability is way up, or, you know, my latency, like my timing getting to sleep takes a really long time. But it's just, there's so many, I mentioned variabilities in this, but it's there's so much that goes into it. It's not just one thing that's going to get you a good sleep, but there are things that sure can really help.
Well, after the interview, we'll talk. I think I got a good solution for you.
All right. So I need any help I can get.
So you had this great post on Instagram yesterday. You did this video about loneliness, and you know, it's a huge problem. It was a huge problem before COVID-19, and now it's something that's very concerning. And you shared these amazing statistics from a recent report from the National Academy of Sciences, Engineering, and Medicine, where, get ready, guys, these statistics are just mind-blowing. Social isolation's been linked to 50% increased risk of dementia, 29% increased risk of heart disease, and 32% increased risk of stroke. Just sit with those numbers for a second. So, like, you know, community, connecting, whether it's with, you know, a dog or your cat, or getting on Skype or FaceTime with family, you know, it's so critical right now.
It really is. And even here, like, this is just audio, right? But still, we turn the video on and we're able to connect and interact, be able to see facial expressions, and like, yeah, we're waving at each other right now. So it's like, even that is just such a great way. And we're able to use our devices. And you mentioned like and we're here on Skype or IG Live or the Zooms or FaceTimes. Like, now is the time to really take advantage of that. You know, and Dr. Krask at UCLA, I've worked with a number of times. She's in the psych department and like super, super badass. And I've worked with her, and she puts the why and adds the stats and is super brilliant. She has like, you know, she has like Hall of Fame type accolades. She's honestly amazing. You should look her up. But she said, it says social connection is the best way to offset depression and anxiety. And it's proven. I mean, you see with the numbers there, how staggering they are. And, you know, I don't have it here right in front of me, but it talks about like the effects that it has on your body and mind as far as, you know, smoking 15 cigarettes a day. Yep. And, you know, it's can be worse for you than excessive drinking and bad diet and not working out. So it's really important that we stay connected during this time, because I actually had my grandmother, I wasn't able to see her before she passed. And a lot of people, and this was many years ago, but that was something that I even said in my Players Tribune article, was like, I wasn't able to go through the grieving process and I wasn't able to see her before she passed. And then when she was laid to rest, I didn't get to see her. And a lot of people that's happening now. And I mentioned like people having babies being born and they're like, oh no, your husband or your spouse or your significant other isn't able to be there. We need to keep everyone we can, you know, out of the emergency room or out of the hospital to treat COVID-19. But there is ways like to combat that and to, you know, kind of circumvent being with each other. I know it's weird talking through a screen and having to do that, but I think this will change the way that we connect forever. In a lot of ways, it can be for the better.
Yeah, you know, before COVID-19, I had someone on our podcast, Celeste Headley, who wrote a great book, and we talked about loneliness. And what she was saying was so interesting, that, you know, one, there definitely is a loneliness epidemic. And just the simple act of, you know, getting your morning coffee and saying hello to the barista, like just those weak ties and those little social interactions were so huge in terms of mental health. And that's kind of been lost in this. And so for some people, you know, look, like it's tough. And just turning every call and do FaceTime or whatever it may be, or getting on Instagram messaging, it's just so important.
You know what? You know what's a funny thing that I started doing? And I love what you said about just saying hi to the barista, because so much of the time we're like, okay, we give the order, we look at our phone. We, you know, I think the first thing, this is what I was going to say, the first thing that we do when we get in an elevator, what do? We look down or we look at our phones and try to act like we're doing something. Then, you know, how many times have you walked off on the wrong floor because you're not paying attention, you're not mindful of what's going on? So I like make it a point to try to, and like, you know, we're big guys, we're in elevators, people, you know, are looking at us like, oh, you know, who are these giants? But I think it's just that, hey, how's it going? Like, how's your day? All right, cool. Like, just the easiest little thing where people, you know, you walk off the elevator, I'd do the same, be like, oh, that was a nice little exchange. Like, it was this much, it was, you know, essentially nothing. And the person could say, you know, I don't really care to have the conversation, but at least you're trying. The intent was there. And I think that is, while it seems like a small thing, like loneliness is such a, I was doing a panel with the Obama Foundation and President Obama. And he said, one thing I haven't heard you talk about, and now I've been so mindful of this, is it's such a social issue. Like, he mentioned loneliness, and he mentioned, you know, how people don't feel that sense of togetherness or isolation. And then he tied in like gun violence and gun control, like how, you know, people have access to these and they're like, you know, I don't want to be here. I'm going to take my own life. So like, you combine two of those things and it creates this epidemic, and it creates numbers trending in the wrong direction to where we are now.
Yeah, it's a big issue, and I'm definitely very worried about what our world looks like when we get out of this. So yeah. I'm curious. I think, you know, it's so awareness is so important with regards to taking care of oneself, and, you know, having an awareness that like, hey, I can struggle mentally, I could struggle with mental health, I could struggle with depression. I think having that awareness is so key, because you can often feel yourself like, hey, I feel like I'm a little bit of a slippery slope right now before this. Yeah, exactly. Like, so what do you do when you feel like you're slipping, where you're like, oh man, this is going to a place where I don't want it to go? Like, do you go for a run? Do you meditate? Do you call Channing Frye? Like, what are some of those practices you do when you feel like, oh, going to a place I don't want to go?
I think it depends a lot like, you know, when I wake up in the morning and I'm in the season, or I'm in the off season and I'm training extremely hard, I wake up and say, okay, what does my body need before I'm going to go and, you know, compete, or I'm going to attack this day, or I'm going to get better from, you know, when it comes to my job and something I've loved for so long. So I kind of do a self check, on what I'm feeling at the moment. So I, you know, it's funny. I was on a IG Live with Andy from Headspace yesterday, and I've tried to adopt that a lot more. I'm not gonna say I'm religious with it, but I hope to get there at some point. But something I do in the morning is I just lay down on the ground. You know, I'll breathe and foam roll, or I'll just sit kind of with my legs on tabletop and just sit there and take 6 to 8 deep breaths. I think that helps center me. But when I feel triggers like in an everyday setting, more often than not, I'll just like remove myself from something. And that's what I mentioned with the first panic attack. I wasn't able to do that because there's 23,000 people, right? So, you know, for me, it was like just either stepping outside, it's taking, you know, a break just to calm and center my thoughts. Or, you know, it's happened, you know, for me, sometimes I can run extremely hot, and I think, you know, that leads to even more anxiety, and then you start sweating. So for me, it's just, you know, either putting like a ice pack on my wrist, or putting an ice pack on the back of my neck, or taking a really cold, you know, glass of water. You know, that's something that it seems so simple and kind of silly, but for me, that's something that has worked really, really well. Or connect. It's funny because my dog is like a person, and I share, it's funny, like I overshare her, but like the direct message I get from like peers and NBA players and other people, it's like funny. So I'm like, okay, maybe I'm not, like, but it's like over the top. It's kind of excessive, but just like, it's such a mindless activity. So if I'm at home, I'll just be like, all right, you know what? I'm just going to go throw the ball with her. I'm not going to take my phone. I'm going to set it aside, maybe put it on airplane mode. and just go about my day. So that's just a couple kind of different things on top of, all right, I'm just going to go work out, or I'm just going to go shoot and get my mind off of things. But just practicing really good choices and really good habits when it comes to that kind of thing.
Yeah, for me, the inhale for two and hold and exhale for four, I do that a lot. And you mentioned hugging your dog. We have two little girls, a three-year-old and a 10-month-old. And my wife and I are co-founders and work together. So, and we have no childcare. So just like the simple act of just hugging the three-year-old, you know, just that alone.
It's therapy. And we have a Vizsla, so it's Velcro, like it's straight. If she wants to chew her bone, if she wants to, you know, if she's in the house, she's either laying literally on her feet, or she's sitting on top of us, or if we're laying down on the couch, she's like on our face. So just having that is super calming. So she's full therapy. Like that was part of the reason we did it too, because I had an injury last year with my foot that caused me to miss quite a few games. And we were just like, you know what? Snap decision, figure the rest out later. We're just going to get a dog. And it was an unbelievable decision, especially during this time. It's like, you know, you see so many people fostering dogs, adopting dogs, getting dogs, because that connection is something that is, you know, really beneficial for your health.
So for people listening who are struggling right now, you know, what advice do you have for those people? And, you know, what do you want the world to know about mental health?
That, I mean, really, to put it in simple terms, just I would say it too, like you're not alone. And, you know, any effort to pay it forward or speak your truth or any of that is going to make a big difference, and it's worth it, and it's going to help. And I always say nothing haunts us like the things we don't say. So I've been able to live life, and you know, it's like in my first answer was just live life outwardly. I mean, I think everybody lives life or makes a decision to do so at their own pace, but I think holding it in even keeps that feeling that I have in the pit of my stomach every single day, and I'm on medication, and it neutralizes it, makes it seem a little bit farther away. In some instances, like some things can, I think that's how you help put it at bay. But it's allowed me to change the relationship with these feelings. And when those triggers do come, I say, you know what? I know that this is going to be okay. And I know that, you know, other people are, you know, in this with me. So it is such a, as we've talked about, really this whole conversation, you know, it's either reading between the lines or like the underlying factor is just that sense of community. And like we, you know, as we talked about before with your friend, like we share a story. We all know somebody who's struggling, whether it be us or somebody at arm's distance, as I mentioned, but just continue to do wellness check-ins, whether it's yourself or with somebody else. Because this is, you know, a fight, and, you know, talk about eliminating or softening the curve. Like this is going to be, you know, something that we need to do in terms of a mental health as well. And, you know, interacting and having early intervention with as many people as we can, because this is really, if you look at the numbers there, it's really a young people disease. Like if you talk about, you know, acute anxiety, if you talk about depression, schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, so on and so forth, like at age 14, 50% of the people are showing symptoms and are in some cases not diagnosed. And by 24, it's 75%. So that early intervention is huge. And that's why I would really, and I didn't have the presence of mind to do it when I was young, and I was a young man, and that came with, you know, a whole other set of, you know, trying to wear Kevlar and have armor on and not show weakness. And that was my playbook. But that early intervention, I think, is extremely huge. And just trying to get your kids and young people to open up.
Amen to that. Well, this is, you know, it's a heavy topic. It's a serious topic, and very critical in this world of COVID-19 and 2020 and beyond. And so to close, I figure we have a little fun. I know you're a film buff. So any favorite films you'd like to share with the audience right now as we're all, you know, binging on Netflix and what have you?
Yeah. So one of the Well, Ozark just came out, right? Again, so Jason Bateman, huge fan of him. He actually was one of the producers and starred in Outsider. Stephen King read the book as well. Amazing. So that was on HBO. I would say for movies, one of my North Stars and one of the greatest guys, for every reason goals and icon idol for me is Paul Newman. So The Sting, if you've ever seen The Sting, it was 1973. I actually posted it, some sort of review and why it's my favorite film on Instagram. But there's a scene on the train when he's, with a mafia don and he's playing poker with him. And it's really, really great. It's shows his full arsenal that he has. Also, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest with Jack. It's just brilliant. Ken Kesey, also a book that I've read. He was from Oregon, had the idea of the book from a mental institution in Oregon. And that's an unbelievable film because Jack's just brilliant. Godfather 1 and 2, obviously, it's amazing. My girlfriend hadn't seen that. And I'm like, are you crazy?
What?
and then we've been watching a lot of Brad Pitt movies. There was the one where it's the three brothers and it's, God, it's escaping me right now.
With Aidan Quinn and Anthony Hopkins is in it too.
Oh, well, Anthony Hopkins is,
he's the dad, right?
The dad. Yeah.
Yeah. I totally know the film. And Julia Ormond, I can't think of the name.
It's amazing with the three brothers and she falls in love with each and she's like, I'm forgetting it, but, no, great movie. We just watched Unfaithful, Richard Gere, Diane Lane, which is great. I'd never seen. Great Expectations, too, was great with Gwyneth Paltrow, Ethan Hawke. A lot of the first ones I mentioned are multiple Academy Award winners, but there's some I'm trying to make my way through that I've never seen. And that this is what I'd say. Don't believe the Rotten Tomatoes. Is it Rotten Tomatoes?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't believe that score. Do not believe that because it's ridiculous. There's been so many movies that I've gotten some from or, love somebody's performance. Maybe I didn't like the story or how it ended, but it was cool.
We've been doing a lot of documentaries lately. We did, of course, Tiger King, McMillions.
Amazing. Great. McMillions. One... The one detective on McMillions is the biggest joke. He's so funny.
Yeah, for you guys listening, that's definitely who knew that the McDonald's Monopoly contest was rigged for 12 years.
Oh, by the way, I mean, I can't tell you how many times we play, because my dad worked the night shift, my mom worked during the day as a nurse, actually, neonatal intensive care, so she would be wiped and mentally wiped from seeing these really preemie babies suffering. So she'd come on and be like, guys, I can't cook dinner. I'm too tired. Can I just grab McDonald's? We'll be like, the Monopoly game's going on. Of course you can. you have off. Let's go grab McDonald's. There was so much about, and we buy the magazines that had the little McDonald's page and you'd peel the tooth and stickers on it. It was, to know that that was rigged, that was, funny nostalgia, but super heartbreaking.
And what about, I also know you're a fan of wine. Any favorite wine these days?
So at the house here, we have a lot of Napa Valley wines. We actually had some clutter and had been gifted quite a bit. So we had these wine in boxes. So that's another thing, to get rid of clutter, to free your mind. It's I have a full floor drobe next to my bed where I just take off my clothes and throw it down. So I just try to stop doing it. Getting better. But we unboxed all the wine and we just, to see it all out, now I can come in here and kind of reassess if I want to drink, we have that, what's the thing with is it carbon dioxide or where you can pour one glass, what I'm talking about?
Yep. Yep.
So we use that probably every other night. And then if we're going to have a Zoom call or FaceTime with friends for a while, we typically tend to open up a bottle, but there's one bottle in particular that I love from Napa Valley, and it's one only for, typically for special occasions because the price range is crazy, is Promontory. And we just had a bottle of Promontory 2013, which was amazing. But we love Colgan, Continuum, obviously Opus is a throwback that we always have. And You know, anything on Pritchard Hill is amazing. Brandwine, we've been there. We went there with the team. Incredible. So all our friends in Napa, we love you guys. Vice versa. Magnificent Seven is a great bottle of wine. We love them. There's a lot of stuff to unpack there, but big
fans. And so you're also known for traveling. And what's one place, you know, after the season, you just can't wait when you can travel again and go anywhere you'd love to go to or go back to?
So I'm more, that's a great question. We love to travel. Kate and I love to travel. We actually make lists of, and that's where the checklist comes in. We make lists of places that are dream spots and dream vacations for us. And I'm such more of a mountain guy and the wilderness and trees and woods and forests type of guy. Cause I come from the Pacific Northwest and so does Kate. She comes from, she was born and raised in Vancouver, BC. And I wasn't born in Oregon, but I grew up in Portland, Oregon, or just outside. So I'm more drawn towards that, but I feel like after this, I would like to go to a place like, and I've never been as, St. Bart's, like just go to the beach. And while we're doing, you know, we have a chance to do nothing now, I think it would be great to just, hey, sit on the beach, yeah, have a nice glass of wine, something lighter, because we're going to be in the sun, it's going to be warm, and just, you know, enjoy life. I think a lot of people are going to come out of this understanding that there'll be some nights where they're like, I don't know, I'm going to go home and lay it down. They're going to say, you know what, I'm going to take advantage of this time, because we just don't know what life is going to throw at us, what curveball life is going to throw at us.
You mentioned being outside and getting outdoors. Have you guys been to Blackberry Mountain?
We haven't.
Definitely go there. We love that place. It's outside, about 20 minutes outside of Knoxville. Amazing wellness programming, amazing food. So Blackberry Farm was the original, and then Blackberry Mountain is the newer version that has the wellness slant, and the menu is amazing. You can go hiking for 40 minutes up a hill, and there's like a pizza at the top and wine. Like hiking for 40 minutes with the reward.
Yeah, the reward is big. Now, the reward is free for sure. Blackberry Farm is, at least here in the States, that's at the very, very top.
Yep.
And it's funny you mentioned the wine as well. And they say the food is like a 10 out of 10. But the wine, I guess it's the biggest wine cellar in North America.
It's enormous. Colleen, my wife and I, when we were there and we did it, they gave us a tour, and it's unbelievably enormous.
Yeah, I'm sure they have every bottle you could ever ask for.
So my last question, if you could go back in time and give UCLA Kevin advice, what advice would that be?
I've said it before, but like, put down the damn fork, like stop eating. What would I say? Get a better haircut, lose some weight, put down the fork. You know, maybe find some better clothes more than sweats. Like I didn't even have my first pair of jeans. Well, I should say I had jeans, but like a decent pair that like actually fit me halfway decent until I was like 17. I'm going to make fun of myself as far as like aesthetics and haircut and all that. I got a terrible beard, shaved head. It was bad. But as far as my mental health, if I could go back and say anything, I would say, and as I said earlier, I wish I had the presence of mind to know this, but I feel like I potentially could have helped more people had I done it earlier, but that wouldn't have been part of my story. Like it happened the way that it did, but I would have told myself just, you know, nothing haunts us like the things we don't say. So try and just live life outwardly, because I had, for many reasons, so much anxiety, which led me down a lot of various different spirals. And, I lived that all the way through. I was, until about almost 2.5 years ago, but it all happened for a reason. And I'm thankful it did.
Well, God bless you and all the work you're doing with the Kevin Love Fund. It is such an important message. And I am so glad you brought this critical message to light. And reaching a demo of people who probably weren't open to learning about mental health. And, you know, you're helping people, you're saving people, and again, thank you for everything you're doing.
Yeah, and thank you, Jason. Now, this stuff is, you know, having these conversations is super important. So I know you already know this, but like, just keep doing this. It's great.